CliffCentral.com.
So many things to do, so many places to go, so many people to talk to, and we're doing all of that and more this morning. As you may have gathered from last week, if you were listening live, we started talking to Sean Sanders, the founder of Revix. They're a brand new cryptocurrency index business where you could actually buy into that, and they will track the most successful and the most interesting cryptocurrencies for you, so you don't have to do any of the thinking or research around it. But we've just scratched the surface because Sean has more to tell us. As I mentioned just a moment ago, Bitcoin at $8,719, so things are looking quite promising over there at the moment. So Sean, how are you?
Hi Gareth, I'm good, and you?
Good, man. Excellent. We're going to talk today a little bit about some of the platform bundles. So can we dive into some of the basics around this so we can hopefully educate a few of the people who are not sure what this is, and for the people who do know what it is, just give them an idea of how exactly Revix works. So what are crypto platforms?
So I'm going to go on a bit of a rant here.
Go for it.
A minute or so. So essentially platforms, it's like a sector in the world of crypto. Mm-hmm. Much like tech or resources in the world of the stock market.
Right.
And what makes platform-orientated blockchains so interesting is that they have the potential to completely reshape the way the global commerce operates and the way we interact with one another. Okay. It's just an exciting sector in this crazy crypto world. And I guess to really understand how platform blockchains work, you need to go back to the beginning. And this is where Bitcoin, which was essentially the first blockchain protocol, that enabled peer-to-peer payments. And this is just one use case of blockchain technology. And don't get me wrong, I mean, that's a pretty big use case. But the thing is that there's all these other use cases out there. There's hundreds of industries that could be revolutionized using blockchain technology. And this is where the early crypto pioneers like Vitalik Buterin really saw an interesting opening for a general purpose blockchain. And I guess the best way to think about how a platform blockchain operates, or what a general purpose blockchain is to kind of go back 20 years or so ago with the mobile phone.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, essentially, look, mobile phones could do nothing but handle a call. They did nothing, and that's if they handled a call.
Yeah.
Fast forward 20 years, and iOS and Android, they've enabled millions of developers all over the world to build applications on these operating systems. And that's essentially exactly what the likes of Ethereum, Tron, EOS, and Cardano are all looking to do. For platforms.
Right. See, I'm confused because there are all these people who are either massive acolytes and fans of cryptocurrencies, and more especially of blockchain technology, which is what underlies most of this. But then there are people who are just dead against it. I was speaking to someone last week who's actually the CEO of one of the major banks, and he was saying to me, oh, you know what, this cryptocurrency thing, not a believer at all, and said that blockchain technology takes up so much power, just in terms of electricity, that he said he doesn't think it's sustainable. What do you think of that?
Well, I guess that's, you know, the proof of work versus the proof of staking debate,
yeah.
Which is, yeah, you know, there's pros and cons to both. When you're on a platform, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're using proof of stake over proof of work.
Right.
It does use up a lot of electricity, but at the same time, you know, mining uses up a lot of electricity. All these other industries use up a lot of electricity.
Yeah.
And again, this is an industry, right? I mean, I know people like to think about it as, you know, a bunch of kids playing around on their PCs, but the crypto world's pretty big. And, you know, we're nearly approaching the $300 billion big. So
just to go back, yeah. to platforms for a second, what are these blockchain platforms trying to achieve effectively? Because I hear, you know, the argument from you about all these applications that they could potentially have, and I don't disagree at all. We may end up doing so much on blockchain that ultimately it becomes the only trusted way to do anything. But what are they trying to achieve, these platforms, at this stage?
Well, it's essentially like rewriting the internet. It's kind of like going to Web 3.0. So if you think about it today, you've got the internet that was an enabler, right?
Mm-hmm.
It allowed the companies such as YouTube, Airbnb, Uber, you know, they provide very valuable services.
Sure.
But if you think about it, I mean, most of what they do is just a set of very complicated contracts or logic, right? To order an Uber through Uber, as an example, you would use the app, you would call a driver, and the driver would arrive. And how that happens is essentially just something that is an application that could be placed on a blockchain. So you essentially could get a government that's involved that builds this decentralized application. And this decentralized blockchain application wouldn't necessarily extract the fees the way that Uber does. Mm. And this is the way that platforms can work. You can build applications on top of blockchain. So you don't just have, you know, payments. You don't just have Bitcoin payments. You've got a lot of other things, really, really cool things at the moment.
Sean, what differentiates these platforms from each other?
Well, there's kind of this trifecta in the blockchain development world where you can't have security, scalability, and decentralization. So you can't have security of a blockchain without certain measures being put in place. You can't have the scalability, so the number of transactions that can be processed every minute or every second. And you can't have decentralization at the same time. So if you look at the likes of, say, EOS versus the likes of Ethereum, those two are completely different on a decentralization basis. EOS is far less decentralized, but it's able to handle 30 times the amount of transactions of Ethereum. But Ethereum's far more decentralized and far more secure, but not as scalable.
Right. Okay, so in other words, it's like something being attached to these three strings, and each string is made shorter or longer, depending. And so in the triangle, the little thing in the middle moves around to whichever corner is pulling it at the hardest.
That's exactly it, yeah.
Okay, I'm trying to draw a mental picture, because for some of us, it's not as easy to understand these things.
Sorry. Well, I mean, maybe looking at a few different use cases will help, right? So this is on top of the Ethereum blockchain, like I said, that these decentralized applications, which are just like applications on your phone, right? Mm-hmm. And if you think about one out there, it's called Filecoin. Now, what does Filecoin do? Essentially, it allows you to use your hard drive as a means to earn income.
Yeah.
So you can essentially load the file drive data and software on your computer. You can leave your computer to run, and your hard drive will then be rented out essentially in like an Airbnb sort of model to somebody else, and you get rewarded in Filecoin.
Right.
So you no longer need to have servers all over the world, which is, I think, pretty rad. I mean, your next door neighbor could be keeping whatever you have on your PC that's encrypted that he could never see just on his PC, and you get rewarded for it.
Yeah, sure. And processing power can be put to better use, because people who have machines that are on but not doing anything can make those machines work for them.
Exactly. And that's Golem that works on the Ethereum blockchain. Another really cool project going on at the moment is Nike's CryptoKicks.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of this.
No, tell me.
You know, there's not too much out there in the market at the moment, but essentially they've put a patent out and they've had the patent accepted whereby they're going to create a marketplace. And this marketplace is going to be for non-fungible tokens. And what this essentially means is that you can go and, say, design a pair of Nike shoes. You can put them up on the marketplace. And for individuals that go and buy these shoes, you get the royalties. You're a designer. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden they've created decentralized crowd design.
Fantastic. That's very, very cool. All right, so let's just get back to Revix. How does your platform bundle make investing easier in this sector? I mean, a lot of people have been listening to this now, and they might be thinking, wow, okay, this is great. I don't necessarily understand it, but it sounds to me like something worthwhile. How does your bundle help to make all of this more sensible for the rest of us?
Yeah, so I mean, it takes a while to really grasp a platform bundle, just like the same or a platform in general, right? It's the same as when you're thinking about the internet for the first time, like what is HTTP and like what are all these things? So
look,
what we've done is we've essentially tried to make it a lot more simpler. We've tried to make it easier. You're not going out there and trying to guess that Ethereum is going to be the winner or EOS is going to be the winner or maybe Cardano or Tron, because there's 50, 60 different platform-based cryptocurrencies gunning for top spot.
You lost me after EOS.
Sorry?
You lost me after EOS. Tron?
Tron, Cardano, these are all Eastern-focused cryptos. Okay. So they have Eastern development teams and, you know, it's just a different world really. So, yeah, look, what we're trying to do is we're saying there's no guaranteed winner in the space. You've got Intel, which is building across EOS, Cardano, and Ethereum. You've got big corporates. You know, you've got Visa doing exactly the same, building across multiple blockchains.
Right.
And you know, why are they doing this? They're hedging their bets. They're saying that they don't know if Ethereum is going to be this platform blockchain. They don't know if EOS is going to be this platform blockchain that's going to, you know, be the success story of tomorrow. So what we're saying is rather own a diversified bundle of platform-focused blockchains. Right. And that'll be the best thing for the long-term outcome in terms of investment returns.
Well, go and take a look. You can find out more on Revix's platforms by going to cliffcentral.com. You'll see Beyond Bitcoin is what we're doing every week. And it's nice to talk to you, Sean. Have a good week. We'll catch up with you, hopefully some more great price news this time next week.
Amen. Yeah. Have a good one.
All right, dude. Thanks very much. There's Sean Saunders, Revix. And you can find out more by going to cliffcentral.com. You can download the first episode or you can re-listen to this one. And there'll be plenty more in the way of updates coming up. So we're getting into the higher grade stuff this time around Bitcoin and Ethereum and all the various platforms. So now you understand a little more, I hope. Did you get any more, Sia?
Just enough. Just enough. Do you want to roll your eyes as we get into the news, but straight after that feature with Revix?
Yeah.
Because it's now reported your BFF, Mark Zuckerberg, and Facebook will reportedly launch their own cryptocurrency in 2020.
I know.
How does that make you feel now?
Well, this is the way it's going. If you don't pay attention to this stuff, that's why it's important that we've got Sean on here every week, or whoever it is that we end up speaking to from Revix. And we may speak to some experts internationally and lots of other people too. Fact is, if you don't know what's going on in this cryptoverse, you're going to be left out.
Mm. They're calling it a global coin. And supposedly they've met with a lot of trading firms. They've met with cryptocurrency exchanges and bank officials in the past couple of months in order to put all of these plans into place. But reports have closely watched such meetings after Facebook's plans for digital currency were first reported back in December of last year, actually.
Well, we'll check in every Monday, so you won't be left out in the cold. Okay, let's get into some other stuff that's in the news. Where do we begin this morning? We spoke a little bit about the inauguration earlier. I don't want to go into too much more around that. But if you are interested in some of the more kind of, besides the obvious stuff, Tokyo Sekhwale said that Cyril is not a street fighter, he's a diplomat and a great negotiator. So the former cabinet minister, Tokyo Sekhwale, coming out of the woodwork to say that he supports Cyril. Apparently, there's a woman who went missing after a walk in the woods in Hawaii.
Oof.
And she was found alive in a forest, and she's been reunited with her friends and family. But she went missing on May the 8th, and she only got found this weekend. It's a long time to be out in the wild.
So well, when you take mushrooms, Gareth, sometimes you need that much.
she was found. Listen to this quickly. She's 35 years old. Amanda Ella is her name. Take a listen to this. This is the story on the American news networks. I think this is from Today Show.
Our top story, and it's that joyous reunion in Hawaii this morning. A woman missing for more than 2 weeks after she went hiking in the woods, found alive. It's being called a miracle there. NBC's Molly Hunter is following this breaking story for us this morning. Molly, some good news.
Some really good news. Peter, good morning. Now, authorities feared the worst for Amanda Eller, ending the search after just 3 days. But her family wouldn't give up. And more than 2 weeks later, an amazing find as their searchers flew over the forest. Amanda was alive.
Well, isn't it nice that the family didn't give up?
Imagine after 3 days.
Imagine if they'd given up and she'd pitched up like a year or so later, all rugged and looking wild and, you know, sort of been eating raw meat.
Do you think your family would have sustained a hunt for 17 days?
I think most people would have.
What is that? Just shy of 3 weeks?
Yeah, it's not me. How did they find her?
A miracle in Maui.
It's just unbelievable. I'm so incredibly happy to have my girl back.
This morning, a woman who is missing ever since she set off on a hike more than 2 weeks ago is safe and sound, reunited with her friends and family. Yeah! 35-year-old Amanda Eller, a yoga instructor and physical therapist, mysteriously disappeared on May 8th after going on a walk in the woods. When she didn't come home, her boyfriend called police, fearing the worst.
The moment that she did not arrive home at night, I knew something was wrong.
Police found her white SUV with wallet and cell phone inside at a popular trailhead at the Makawao Forest Reserve in Maui. But after 72 hours, police called off the search. Still, Eller's friends and family didn't give up, and her family offered up $50,000 for her return. Search parties combed the area by land and by air.
We really felt strongly that she was probably in the forest from the get-go.
And late Friday, they spotted her deep in the forest as they flew over Maui in a helicopter.
We're all literally looking down at the same time, and at the same time, we all did a double take of, oh, there's a hiker.
It was Amanda, waving her arms at the team in the sky, stuck between two waterfalls, but able to stand, walk, and talk. Her grateful friends and family saying they never lost hope.
She's a very strong girl. She's spiritually strong. And
okay, let's just stop it right here. I've got a couple of problems with this, and nobody ever calls out the idiot woman who went on this walk for being an idiot person.
Because she says she was stuck in there and she realized that she was lost and thought she had turned around and was walking towards her car, but she was actually walking deeper and deeper
Here's
into
the problem.
This property.
Don't go on a hike on your own.
First thing.
Everybody knows this. Even on Table Mountain, where you've got a mountain that looks like a table, that you can't possibly get lost. People get lost, okay? You get lost. You get disorientated. You go into the vegetation. You don't know where you are. Turn left, turn right. Suddenly you find you're completely lost. Now, don't go on your own. If you're with someone, the two of you can support each other. You can try something out. You can figure out a plan. You can... So first of all, you're a moron to go walking on your own.
Hey, I do that.
No. You got to be careful, Sia.
No, but I do that. And in South Africa, we have different things. Like there's a Walter Sisulu Botanical Gardens. You have to sign in and you leave your details. Yeah. So heaven forbid something were
but
to happen to you.
You take your phone with you, right? And you make sure you got a signal. Now, she goes off. Now, everybody's saying, oh, you know, we're so happy we found her. No one has said,
calling her out.
Listen, you stupid goddamned idiot. Look what you've done. Everybody had to take off 17 days to try and find you.
And
you know what the cost
money.
Is? Helicopters, search teams, police, local law enforcement. All because this yoga instructor, Ed, decided to go walking.
She's trying to
and didn't know the difference
find
between
her chakras.
North, south, east, and west. If you are the kind of person who likes to go hiking, you need to have an idea of how to get yourself there and back. I mean, even if you drop things like Hansel and Gretel to find your way out of the forest, honey, you don't just walk. Right, Ben? Am I stupid?
No, you're right. I completely agree with you here. But the fact
that
she was found... I know
8-year-olds that could do this.
The fact that she was found between two waterfalls tells me there was hallucinogenics involved. She's like, oh, this is it. Hands in the air, having the best life, seeing shapes and colors.
Ben, if you do want to know, all she said on that front is that she survived these 17 days by drinking from the streams, and she says, in her words, eating plants.
Okay.
I'm not going to say what type of plants they were, but that's all what right. happened. She was found malnourished, she was shoeless, and had a broken leg and torn meniscus in her knee, ana, as well as sunburn and scrapes.
Sorry, stupid.
Yeah, but she's expected to make a full recovery now.
Mentally, though, she'd still probably be stupid.
Huh? Yeah, I think that's going to change anytime soon. Okay, something stupid that went on in Hawaii. And by the way, Hawaii and Maui in particular, you've got a volcano there, which is the high ground. Always go to the high ground, and you'll be able to find, you'll be able to see more or less what's going on. Climb. And or else go down to the low ground and go with the stream, go with the river. Eventually, you'll end up at the sea. It's an island.
I don't think a lot of people think like you.
You're not going to keep walking forever in Hawaii. It's an island. It's a big island. Maui's a big island. But you can find your way. Either follow the stream to the sea or else go up to the high ground and see if you can get a look at what's going on. And if you don't know the geography of the area you're in, you should not have been walking. Sorry.
Well, she could have been preoccupied with some plants.
Just unbelievable. All right, so this is a horrible, horrible story, but I have to bring it up because this is so disgusting. Apparently, while you sleep, there are face mites that live in your pores. They eat the grease from your face, and they mate on your face while you sleep. Face mites.
Are these good for us?
Yeah, of course.
So, you say so, Ben.
Look at crap like this happening all over our bodies.
If they're eating all the dead skin, then isn't that...
And the grease.
Yeah, isn't that sort of good? But the idea of...
They must be very fat then. They have very greasy faces.
Mine are obese. They are living their best lives on my skin, if that's the case.
So you probably have a few dozen arachnids grinding up on the tiny shafts of hair lodged inside your face, quietly gorging themselves on your natural oils. Isn't that gross? Apparently there's nothing wrong with you if you have face mites. They, as Ben say, they live peacefully buried in the facial pores of most human adults. They're creepy crawly, they have eight legs, they're transparent, they're microscopic in size. They measure 0.01 inches or 0.3 millimeters apiece, and they live near the roots of facial hair follicles on both men and women.
This is making my skin crawl.
Yes.
Because you've also sent us a link with photos of these mites.
You can actually see them. There is a video. If you look up face mites, you go to videos.
Or just probably don't.
Well,
look that up.
Yeah, you might want to know this stuff. But there they are. A whole lot of these face mites that they infest. I love the language. They infest every one of your pores and eat up what they call sebum, which is the waxy face oils and skin oils that you produce. Isn't that great?
Humans are freaking gross.
Yeah. In fact, there are a bunch of other things that make humans gross. Do you want to hear the whole list?
Oh, it'll be a good list.
Here's 10 reasons humans are gross.
Okay.
So here we go. First of all, your nose runs and gets stuffed up. Some people pick their noses and you sneeze all over the place. It's no surprise that boogers are one of the gross parts of being human. Okay, dust mites, bacteria, pollen, ash, sand, and a whole host of tiny pieces of unhealthy stuff are constantly swirling around in the air you breathe. Thankfully, your snot will help to filter out some of those particles so that unhealthy stuff doesn't make it into the body. Ugh. And also nose hairs, which are pretty gross. Then there's burping. That's another reason humans are gross.
Yep.
Face mites, burping.
Everyone burps. Whether you discreetly burp after excusing yourself from the table or you do it loudly and proudly, everyone lets one go. Gases, primarily carbon dioxide and other gases like methane and hydrogen, can collect and gradually build up in your stomach. This gas can be inhaled when you eat or drink. And then, of course, you have to burp. Then there's pooing, which is, of course, pretty revolting.
Just delightful.
Mm-hmm. It helps rid the body of undigested food and bacteria, which you need to know, is being thrown out. Eliminating waste is a huge part of life for creatures like humans, but it can serve an even greater purpose. It can serve as a clue to your health. Did you know this? The appearance of what you excrete can give signals that something is wrong.
Oh, what a riveting conversation.
Just a word, excrete.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty revolting.
If there's one thing I could change about humans, it really is just that.
Yeah, me too.
If there was some fabulous way to go...
Pass a little pellet through your big toe or something.
Excuse me, I just need to relieve myself. Yeah. And you just go off to the corner, take your shoe off and do that. That'll be fine.
Sneezing is gross. I don't need to go into that. Guts, you know, there's always something going on in your stomach. Skin is pretty gross, as we've just discovered from the skin.
Face mites.
Face mites, yeah. Vomiting.
Well, sometimes that's just necessary. It's just necessary.
After a night of partying, Ben.
And we are going
during
through,
a night of partying.
We're going through the list of things that make people revolting. Farts, of course, are disgusting. And we actually smell body odor.
Bad breath.
Yeah. Ooh. It's revolting. So those are things to think about this morning.
Or not to think about,
welcome
please.
To your animal ancestry. Humans, we think we're so clever. Cryptocurrencies and technology and everything else. But look at us, we're gross.
We're simple and we're basic. In some other news to look to, I don't know where this will draw the line when it comes to privacy, but maybe you might not really trust Amazon when it comes to moving towards the future now. So you know that Amazon has Alexa, and Alexa has taken quite well and does well with its Echo technology. Yep. And for now, Amazon only starts recording your commands or your conversations when your conversation includes the word Alexa, right? Yeah. So it's almost a command. Alexa, turn on the lights, or Alexa, play this playlist.
Right.
But now Amazon is filing a patent application with the US Patents and Trademark Office, saying that now they want to be able to capture more of your conversation.
Uh-oh, I don't like the sound of that.
Do you want to hear their justification?
By the way, my Siri went on the other day for no good reason.
Mm.
It suddenly started talking to me.
It does all the time on the show.
Yeah. And someone was telling me, it was my sister, she said that she was talking to, I think, her boyfriend, and then Siri suddenly came out of the blue and said to her, "Your language is foul and disgusting."
Oh, you see?
Like, you're using foul language. She was horrified.
Oh,
she,
the end is nigh. If Siri is now regulating what we say.
Siri's telling you you're using foul language.
The
Can
end
you imagine?
Is nigh.
Using language unbecoming of a woman of your age.
Can you imagine?
Well, yeah, you may just raise an eyebrow to this, but this is Amazon's justification. They're saying
they
are actually struggling with Alexa and being able to give us amazing service. So Alexa devices currently can't understand commands, they say, when the wake word comes after or in the middle of a sentence.
Right.
But currently, with this patent application, they want to be able to help us wherever the word Alexa might fit in. So, for example, if you say, "Play some music, Alexa."
Instead of saying it up front.
"Alexa, play some music." Yes.
Stop doing that, because now people's Alexas are all going...
I didn't think about that. Oh, well, here's the other example. Turn your Alexas off when you listen to this. They're also saying that for the convenience of "play some music, Alexa, the Beatles, please." They want Alexa to be able to capture that entire phrase and understand it, so that she or he, well, it,
in other
is
words,
able to
okay, so,
help you
so
with
just
the
because,
command.
Just this is how they get into your world. Because you don't put the word at the beginning, and I'm not going to say the word because we've already activated everyone who's listening to us now. So if you put the word at the beginning, it knows to listen. But what they're saying is that they want to be able to make it sound more conversational. So you should be able to put the word at the end of the sentence.
Or wherever you want.
Right. Mm. I'm not for this. I'm against this.
Yeah, because this means then Alexa will always be listening.
Mm. Yes. Correct.
Yeah, but that's what they always are. Our phones are always listening, unfortunately. Like, try something today. Talk about rugs a lot. You will see ads somewhere about rugs. You'll have some store give you an ad somewhere about rugs in your area. Or talk about, I don't know, talk about a new bed to your friends today and see how the ad will pop up. Just try that.
Good point. They're already listening to you.
Give yourself a topic to show how this is working.
But it's got to be something commercial that you know advertisers are interested in.
Yeah, you can't just talk about armadillos. But I mean, talk about something that you can purchase and you will get that.
No one's really going to sell you an armadillo.
No.
Okay, listen to this quick voice note.
You can find one in the East Rand if you ask anybody.
You can find anything in the East Rand. All right, let's take a listen to this.
Morning, guys. Just a quick one. I read the article about the two teenagers that got shot at, Pitfontein or something. And I'm fucking devastated because I know that they're not the only people that got killed this weekend in our country. I live in PE and every week we have gang-related murders, same thing over weekends. And I blame politicians and I blame social media for the shit that's going on in our country. And, you know, I just believe, I can't think that there's more bad people in South Africa than good people. I refuse to believe that. I had to get that off the chest. It's, for me, I just don't understand what's going on. And it's about time the good people stand up. All of us, black, white, Indian, colored, doesn't matter. I refuse to believe that there's more bad people in this country than good people. Right. Anyway, your take on what's going on and your take on that would be appreciated.
Yeah, thanks for the voice note, dude. Cheers. I think these things are more off. It's not like it's a coordinated effort and there are a bunch of people marauding around trying to kill people. We have a pretty lawless society at this stage. People don't follow the rules. You could see it. People kill their wives. I mean, we're talking about successful business people, you know, kill their wives, girlfriends get murdered. Most of the murders that happen are not from complete strangers just passing by. And when it is a complete stranger, or it looks like it in the case of these two people who were shot near the Pitfontein Road, I'm not even sure where that is, but it seems to me like it's just a very scary situation that it could just be, you know, a chance murder. It could be, why would these people have been killed there? They ran out of diesel or petrol or whatever, and then they were just shot in their car. It's crazy, right?
I don't want to add to the hysteria.
No, please, you.
I really don't want to add to the hysteria. And I don't want to sound like a nutcase. But this weekend alone, yeah. So I heard of in total 3 similar stories. So it's the man and the woman. Then it was the teenagers who were left by their father who went to go and find some fuel. And then I also heard of a lady who was left in her car alone, also in a similar incident. So I just don't get it. Are there people who are just walking around at midnight with guns and they are looking for opportunities like this and they're just murdering people for the sake of murdering people?
I don't know. It's very scary. I think this is why people are horrified by this particular story, because they are, as the voice note said, you know, people being murdered all over the place. But a lot of it is gang violence and, you know, stuff that really happens in the deep, dark, ugly underbelly of society.
See.
It's horrible. I don't like any of this. It makes me very uncomfortable.
Okay.
Look after yourself.
If you do want to take your mind off something, and if you are suffering from Game of Thrones withdrawal symptoms, as we were just briefly chatting a little earlier about some new things to watch, Ben, you were alluding to what is called The Last Watch. That's the behind the scenes of season 8 of Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Is that coming out today?
It's already out.
Oh.
It's a 2-hour documentary, and this is when the directors give their in-depth take on each episode.
Okay.
And you'll see the likes of the special effects team, how they put all of the mastery together, and they talk about each scene and what went into it. So it's called The Last Watch.
Okay.
Also something that caught both of your eyes, actually. I've also heard great things about this, so I'll be paying attention and give it a watch. Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new series from HBO. It explores the devastating and the chilling real-life 1986 catastrophe at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant, and the events around the accident, the ignorance, they say, and also the misinformation that followed and the devastating long-lasting effects that followed. That seems like a juicy series to watch.
Well, it is. It was a scary situation that developed there. And there's, you know, Chernobyl's still out of bounds for most Russians. I mean, you're not allowed to just go in there. Sealed off. They created what they call a sarcophagus, a concrete tomb for the actual reactor. Ooh. It's just covered in concrete. They've tried to contain as much of the radiation as possible. The city next door to Chernobyl, where most of the people who worked in the nuclear power plant lived, is completely shut off. I mean, there's still, you know, the doors are open if they were left open. The blackboards have the last lesson on them. There are prams and pushcarts just left where they were abandoned. People were bussed away. They were just loaded onto buses and taken away. All their houses still are exactly the way that they were, obviously full of dust and everything else, but exactly as they were when the people left. No one goes in there anymore.
I'm surprised we haven't seen...
Spooky. It's really spooky.
I'm not really judging, but I'm surprised we haven't seen any loonies just go there to commit suicide.
You can't get in. I mean, it's sealed off, it's fenced off, it's walled off. It's just impossible to get in.
Would be quite a fabulous way
to go. And remember, for a long time, you would have just been shot on sight if the Russian government had seen you go anywhere near it. It's not like they were worried about your human rights, freedom of movement. So... Very interesting. I'm really excited about the show. I'll give you some feedback on it once I watch the first episode.
Yeah, if you were into The Handmaid's Tale.
Yes.
The 3rd season is out now.
Sure.
Yeah, so that straight up and said. And then also, if you are into some emotional series to watch, Big Little Lies is back for a second season. Big Little Lies has like Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman in it as well, Zoe Kravitz. And in this later season, Meryl Streep will be starring in it as well. And the series just follows like this group of five suburban women who by the end of the series murder someone. So the entire series like follows who got murdered.
Sounds right up your street.
Yeah, who got murdered, and one of the ladies did it, but which lady did it, and why did they do it? And in this second season, we find out that Meryl Streep is the mother of the man who was murdered.
Just guilty.
Who's guilty?
Meryl Streep, obviously.
The second...
I didn't hear anything you said before that, but she's guilty.
Ben's always found her very suspicious.
Here's the explanation. In the second season, Meryl Streep is coming in as the mother of the man who was murdered.
Ben says that somehow she murdered her son.
Okay. Meryl Streep killed everybody in Murder, She Wrote. She blamed Angela Lansbury.
All right, that's all in series that are coming up.
There's something else you should really watch. There's a series called Pose. Now, it's out there. It really
Tell
is.
Me?
It's about transvestites in the 1980s.
Oh, wow.
So you're dealing with a whole bunch of sexuality. You're dealing with AIDS. You're dealing with general acceptance. It's such an incredible show. Brilliantly well, like so well done. Netflix show. There's nothing like I've ever seen. Like on the bat, on the descriptor, not something I would ordinarily watch, but it's absolutely amazing. Like you think you have problems in this day and age, like the idea of growing up, like you're a woman in a man's body, and how you know back then people weren't understanding that kind of stuff. Nowadays,
there was no trans movement.
There wasn't, but nowadays it's like you're seen as a hero in some cases. Sure, you'll be ostracized by many people in society, but back then, like what a stigma it was. And how the operations were so dangerous. But it's a crazy show, and it is, like, fabulous.
All right, let's take a look. Here's some of it.
Focus, children. It is time we remind the world who we are. Jackpot.
Mother, what do we take?
Everything.
The category is... royalty.
Wow, so they all dress up, huh?
Wind up dancing for a whole bunch of junkies.
I want to be a star.
You ever consider joining a house?
What do you mean?
Well, a house is a family you get to choose.
I have bigger dreams of performing at some ball.
Okay, so these are they all trans people or are they just...
some are just gay.
Oh, okay.
But even back then, just being gay was obviously a big thing. So, like, this starts off with this guy, he gets kicked out of the house. Like, his parents find out that he's gay, and they literally just kick him out.
Right.
So now he's stuck in the streets, but he wants to be a dancer. He gets picked up by these transvestites. They form this family of their own, and they all perform at these balls, these big gatherings where everyone dresses up.
Hmm.
And this dude called Pray Tell, he then announces them on. It's just such a fascinating show. I've said, there's nothing like this out there. It's such a bold show because it took some massive risks, and they got like full-on transvestite, trans people cast. I don't know what the general term is for that.
Right.
But there are so many different things, and like old white men fetishes of how they all wanted these transvestite kind of prostitutes in the sides because they had a bit of a thing for obviously a chick having a dick. So there's layers to the show that are just like, that are so shocking, completely engaging.
Very good. There's another suggestion from Ben. People like your suggestions.
And it's set in the 80s, and one of the main characters actually works for Donald Trump.
Oh, really?
And he's there in this whole Wall Street powers thing, and here he is with this trans on the side, so to speak.
Wow. All right, I want to talk to a guy called Ian Russell. I'll tell you who Ian Russell is first. Let me give you a little bit of background. He is currently heading up the management consulting company Disrupting Consultancy. Prior to this, he was the CEO of BCX, which is Africa's premier end-to-end digital solutions partner. He's also written a book which is called The Other End of the Telescope that I think might provide some lessons on business and the necessary evolution that companies need to move into to have greater success. So it's no small feat to have a career that's involved almost every continent, spanned a quarter of a century. I thought it would be a good idea to talk to Ian and find out what the future of the workplace is. What is all this talk about the fourth industrial revolution? And how can we begin to future-proof our jobs? So we've got him on Skype. And Ian, it's a pleasure to talk to you. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well indeed. Thank you.
Excellent. So tell me about the other end of the telescope, your book. Give us an idea of what we're in for here.
What you're not in for is a Harvard Business Review document with lots of empirical research and lots of complicated theories. What you will be in for is the distillation of the last 25, 28 years of getting shit done in large organizations around the world and some of the absurdities of why things are so difficult in large companies to make things happen.
I love it. I'm already interested because there are a lot of people talking about this stuff and none of them are really... They're not brave enough to guess at what might be next. What they're doing is saying everything's changing and we need to be ready for change, but they're not giving us much more than that.
I 100% agree. And the reality is you've got to own your own portfolio of skills, your own relevance in today's business world and in today's society, rather than worrying about something called a job. And I think this relentless focus on the job may fall away as a consequence of technology, the job may fall away as a consequence of a restructuring program, removes the obligation on you for your personal relevance and how you keep yourself important to the economy and important to society.
So I'm going to go through a couple of the things that you talk about and address in the book. You talk about something called organizational cholesterol. Do you want to tell me what that's all about?
Sure. I mean, when young organizations start, they're agile, they're flexible, they make decisions quickly. You know, it's a few guys and girls who sit around the kitchen table, they've had a great idea, they decide to launch a new product, and they just do it. But as companies scale and get larger and larger, then you put more and more infrastructure around you. You start to buy in systems. Mm-hmm. You start talking about things like human remains and finance functions. And before you know where you are, you've got a whole load of people who think they have a say in those decisions, and the organizations start to slow down. And over time, you get this kind of sclerotic tendency of the arteries to clog up the cholesterol. Mm-hmm. And those big organizations now cannot be as flexible, nimble, and agile as the smaller guys. And it becomes a material problem. So you get these huge supertankers trying to turn around instead of a flotilla of speedboats.
Yeah. There's also another thing that you address, the loneliness of leadership. And people don't seem to understand that, you know, there's this huge respect and admiration among ordinary people for entrepreneurs at the moment because they're the ones who are brave enough to do new things and pioneer and start their own operation and begin going into territory where other people haven't gone before. But the reality of it is that that's a very, very lonely, scary place to be. And no entrepreneur will come out of the other side of it saying it wasn't worth it. But a lot of them disguise and hide the uncomfortable reality of dealing with cash flow and staff and complicated startups with all of their challenges. It's a lonely place, right?
It really is, and very few people talk about it. As I say, I've been running very large pieces of organizational machinery for a long time, and people don't want to talk about feeling vulnerable. They don't want to talk about their loneliness. They don't want to talk about the challenges, because that very vulnerability then becomes something that a competitor may exploit, or a shareholder will feel uncomfortable about, or an employee starts to question, should I follow this person if they're not sure themselves? And it's the same thing for an entrepreneur. You can't outwardly show and manifest that uncertainty, because why would your customers buy your product? Why would somebody invest in my business if I'm not confident? So you project outwards all the time, but inwards can be a very difficult place to be. And I think large organizations, small companies, scaffold their leaders very poorly. In other words, the support structures that get put in place are nothing like as thoughtful and insightful as they could be. And I address that in the book and very candidly talk about some of the challenges that I went through and how, in retrospect, I could have been helped more.
Human capital is another – this is a buzz term that is thrown around a lot. People talk about human capital, and it used to be human resources, and I heard you saying even human remains just a moment ago. These strategy failures in human capital are part of the reason that so many companies don't evolve, don't change, and don't make it to being effective in the 21st century, right?
I really believe that. I think the very fact we call it human capital itself is a big part of the problem, because psychologically we're saying we're treating a person like a piece of machinery, like an asset. It's part of our capital equipment. And the second you start to reduce a human down to being a piece of machinery, then you're starting to remove our fundamental understanding of what those human rights are and how we should think and talk about people. There's a wonderful book by a guy called Ian Fior, the founder of Sorbet, and he actually talks in there about the need to talk less about employees as expense items and more about the employees as being your wealth creators. And Ian went as far in his chart of accounts to actually remove the payroll costs from the expense line and create a whole new segmentation called wealth and wealth creation and wealth distribution, because that's what he saw employees doing, creating the wealth for the company and then redistributing the wealth back to those people that created the wealth. And not to talk about human capital, not to reduce everything down to an asset or a balance sheet kind of number. I think it's so important, and something that, again, in retrospect, is something I wish I'd understood much earlier in my career, because I think we've really got to understand how we get the emotional, psychological buy-in of the group of people that work with us, rather than just talking about them as an expense line.
Would you say there's a talent scarcity? Because we hear about all of this. We hear that there aren't enough talented people in business. There aren't enough people who have the right qualifications. Is that true?
I think our wonderful country has an abundance of natural, raw, intellectual horsepower and talent. I just think we are so blessed in this country. However, where we fall over is our ability to access that raw talent. And we put a series of artificial lenses and artificial screens in place that stop some of that raw talent being able to come through into the workplace quickly and effectively. So we have a preoccupation with pieces of paper like matric. We worry too much about tertiary education qualifications. We worry about how you speak. We worry about how you dress. So when somebody gets into an interview room for the first time, you know, to get their first job in an organization, some people know what to do and some people don't. But the person who don't may be much more talented, have much more raw intellectual horsepower, have much more to offer that organization than the polished person in the suit that's been taught what to say and how to say it. And we've just got to remove those screens and filters before we start to unleash that raw talent that we have.
You've had some other people contribute to the book, and these are people who are well known to us. I mean, Richard Mulholland, Rich is often a contributor here with us. Happin Chingila, who's terrific. Rapelang Rabana. And Walter Adao. I mean, what was the purpose of including other people's thoughts in this book? Most people just write a book themselves.
I was really concerned about believing myself if I just wrote myself. So right. I wanted to bring in a group of folks that could challenge my views and perspectives. They're all people I've known for a long time and I've worked with and collaborated with before. But it's a very diverse group of people. Mm-hmm. And I mean diverse in terms of the sense of their backgrounds, the way they think, the things that they do. And in fact, you'll see in the pages of the book, both Rich and I agree with each other that there is no such thing as this kind of fourth industrial revolution. And yet you've got Volta writing in the book that it's absolutely an industrial revolution. And this is why it's important. So the ability to actually be able to debate and to constructively argue around some of these constructs stops an author, I think, getting lazy and falling into their own traps. And it was very important to me that, you know, we presented a bit of a balanced view of what's happening in today's workforce. And hopefully it comes off. I mean, they're great people. They've written some great pieces and I'm looking forward to working with them again.
It sounds really, really interesting. I'm thrilled that you brought this book out. I think the timing is excellent. It's called The Other End of the Telescope. And the launch is actually taking place on Tuesday from 6 p.m. at Workshop 17 in Sandton. If you're interested to find out more, you can go to heavychef.com and you can meet. Can we meet you there? Are you gonna? Are you
absolutely. Gonna, I will be there signing every book that you bring, and their ticket price includes a book as well. So absolutely.
Excellent. Ian Russell, entrepreneur, speaker, and now author as well. Thank you very much, Ian. It's a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you so much indeed.
Very good. There's Ian Russell. And that pretty much is us out of time, Ben.
That's all right, Gareth, because there'll be more time tomorrow.
You know what? That's the one thing we've got.
Yes. Yes.
All right, so let's wrap it up with the unnews for this morning. Here are the stories you need to know, and we will be back on cliffcentral.com first thing tomorrow morning. Enjoy your Monday. Here is the important stuff. Cyril Ramaphosa has had a pretty good weekend, but he's got a tough week ahead. He has to name his cabinet. He's unsure on the final team sheet. In true ANC style, there will be a bribe and bidding stage, which should make things a little easier. But this economy, you know, the hopes of this round raising significant cash is obviously very, very slim. Fresh news on the longest game of hide-and-seek that went wrong. Leading DNA expert Dr. Mark Perlin says he's willing to take a look again at all the DNA in the Madeleine McCann case, as he believes there are answers that have been left untouched in the DNA. In other news, Dr. Perlin is looking to open a bunch of new labs and is looking for funding. I wonder if those are related. 3 days to go until the Cricket World Cup, and there are still some Proteas fans hoping AB de Villiers will somehow return in time for the opening match against England. These people are also waiting for Jesus to return soon, so they're not to be trusted. We will see you tomorrow. CliffCentral.com